What I usually tell do are you more comfortable in English or in Espanol? Does it make any difference?
We can talk either way.
Okay. Yeah, it's either.
It'll make it really si lo devolvemos así.
Sí. Yeah, it's no problem.
Okay. No,
and also too, lo que les digo, I usually tell people is if I ask a question that I don't know, because I have to ask questions like ¿cuántos eran de familia? ¿Y dónde trabajaron? Entonces, if it's too personal or prying or whatever, then you don't have to answer. You can just say, pues no me acuerdo, or I don't want to answer, or whatever.
Okay.
This is an interview of Raimundo Villa. It's taken at his home at 9058 Colmenero in Isleta. Today is Monday, April the 21st, 2003. The interviewer is Richard Baquera, and this is for the Bracero Oral History Project. So first of all, your name?
Raimundo Villa.
And your birthday?
December the 24th, 1939.
And you were born where?
Isleta.
Like in Isleta. Do you remember exactly where? Was it here in Isleta or was it?
Isleta.
Okay.
Born in Isleta, Texas. At the time, ahora El Paso.
Yeah. But was it like a doctor's clinic or? I'm just curious about exactly where.
I don't recall. No.
But it was here.
Okay. It was here, yes.
Okay. And how many in your family?
Eight.
Any brothers and sisters and your mom and dad were there?
No. Right?
No.
There would be,
that includes your mom and dad?
No, there would be, a ver. Ah, Cuca, Manuela, Cuca, Gori, Angelina, Inés, Eduardo, yo, María. It'd be 10, mom and dad.
Okay. And where were you raised when you?
I was born and raised in Isleta on a farm on North Loop Road.
Which would be where Del Valle High School is today,
Del
right?
Valle is high school, where Del Valle High School
Do
is.
Do you remember who used to run the farm?
George Wilmer Spence.
And was he there all the time? Or was there somebody before him?
Before him was a gentleman called Rosenblum.
Remember his first name?
No, I don't recall his first name.
And why was it that you were on that? You were raised on that farm?
My dad was in charge of the farm.
Okay. So you said you were born in 39?
1939.
Do you remember anything about, like, say, World War II?
I remember when it was over.
Uh-huh. And what do you remember about?
I remember the young man come. No, it wasn't World War II, it was Korea. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
No, World War II, it was Korea. I think it was Korea.
So you don't remember anything about, say, the prisoners of war from World War II, Italians or Germans? Prisoners of war, no?
I remember, well, yeah, that's right. It was World War II. World War II ended in, I think, in 1945.
Right.
I was 6 years old.
Six.
Yes, and I remember the Germans picking cotton for working in the cotton fields.
On Spence's farm?
On Spence's farm. This was after Rosenblum.
Lots of them?
A few of them? None. There wasn't that many. I would say 20, 25.
Okay. Did you ever talk to them? Do you remember ever talking to them?
Just greeting words.
Oh.
No conversation. Just greeting words. How you doing? Hi. That sort of thing. We weren't allowed to talk to them.
Oh. And why was that? Just your parents or was it?
No one was allowed near them.
No. They had guards?
They had guards.
Oh, okay. What about your school? Where did you go to school?
I went to school in Isleta.
How did you get to the school? Because it's kind of, it's a few miles, no?
It's a few miles. We used to ride the school bus to school.
Okay.
To and from.
They would pick you up, like, on North Loop?
On North Loop and Ivy Lane. And bring us to school. And it would drop us off there in the evening.
Did you finish grade school? How much education do you have?
I have eighth grade, Ninth grade education. Ninth grade.
So you started high school?
I started high school.
Where?
In Isleta.
I see. And why did you, why didn't you finish the high school?
I was forced to go to work.
Okay. So on the farm with your dad?
On the farm with my dad.
What did you do? What kind of work did you do?
Farm work, regular farm work.
Whatever was?
Hoed, whatever was in season at that time, whatever was, whatever the crop required at the time. We used to irrigate, we used to plant, we used to.
So it wasn't necessarily like the picking of the cotton?
No, 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 no. They we had... picked cotton, yes, but that wasn't entirely it. Although they used to pull us from school to pick cotton.
That too.
In the wintertime.
Mm-hmm. How much did you get paid?
Oh, no. I believe at the time it was 5 cents a pound. Was the going rate.
And where did most of the workers come from? That before the braceros?
Before the braceros, it was usually the people from town, from Isleta, would come down and pick cotton. It was mostly the Tigua Indians.
Oh, see. Mm-hmm. Do you remember any names of the
Tigua Indians? Uh-huh. Yes. I remember the Granillos. I remember Lupe. I forget his last name. I remember Los Hijos de Don Luciano. The Reyeses, there was about three or four of them. And I remember,
how come it was the Tiguas? Wouldn't anybody, it was just that particular group? ¿Por qué ellos y?
The Tiguas used to go there because the man that used to work there, Pedro Carrasco, was married to a Tigua woman.
Oh, okay.
And her relatives would come and pick cotton.
I see. Did they ever hire, like, mojados or illegals from?
There were some illegals. At the time, the Border Patrol would not bother them as long as they were already working on the farm. If they were caught in transit, say from the border to the farm, they would get picked up and returned back to Mexico. But as long as they were on the farm and already working, they would not be bothered.
I see. Was there? Did you always have enough workers, or was there always like a need for?
Only during harvest, there was a need for extra help.
Which would be what, the fall?
It would be the cotton pickers.
Is that mostly what you had on the Spence farm?
Mostly cotton, some alfalfa, mostly cotton.
And it was still all done by hand, pretty much?
Everything was harvested by hand. The cotton oil was harvested by hand. By cotton pickers.
See. I remember at some point they brought some geese or ducks in. Was it geese?
The geese.
What was the idea?
The idea of the geese was to control the weeds.
The geese were supposed to eat the weeds?
The geese would eat the weeds, but they would leave the cotton alone.
Mm-hmm. Remember how many of them there were? Was there a lot of them?
There was quite a few. There was about 300, right at 300 geese on the Spence farm. I used to tend them.
Oh, see.
See?
Yeah. Must have been a lot of trouble to...
I used to tend them in the summertime, you know, when we were not in school. I used to tend them.
Who came up with that idea? Do you know?
It came up on the Stallman farm somewhere down in the valley, or they came up with that. I think they came up with the idea in the pecan orchards.
Oh, and they just thought it would be cheaper than bringing people in?
It would be a lot more economical than bringing people to hoe the weeds.
You don't remember what year it was?
I don't recall the year.
Yeah, I don't either. I just remember we were really young. I was. Mm-hmm. And I remember some geese and... And then they didn't work out, right?
They used them a couple of years, or maybe 1 or 2 years is all. It didn't work out.
Because, do you remember why?
Because the geese would not cooperate. I mean, they would only go to one area. They wouldn't go they wouldn't go all over the place. They like to stick around the water.
Oh, okay. And I remember they used to leave a lot of their droppings everywhere.
Right? Yeah, they made a mess. Everywhere they went, it was a mess.
Yeah. So they just got rid of them and that was it, huh?
Well, what they did is they got them as goslings in the early season, and then when they grew up, yeah, I guess through the summer, and there was no longer need for them to be working the fields, the cotton had grown and there was no more weeds coming up, they would sell them. They would go to market.
Oh, I see.
They would go to market. But where, I don't know.
But did they really eat the weeds and not hurt the cotton? Was that working out like that or no?
Like I said, it worked in areas, but not everywhere, not in the whole field. You couldn't control them to go from one end of the field to the other. They like to hang around the shady, the shades and the water. The ditches water. Were full of water, and they like to hang around the water when it was real hot.
I see. Mm-hmm. Well, so there usually was enough workers, as many as you needed.
There was hardly any shortage of workers.
I see. So what's the first thing you remember about the Bracero program?
I don't recall exactly what year it was that the Bracero started coming. But I remember dealing with them. I had to talk to them because the farm owner, which would be Spence, didn't understand Spanish, and I had to interpret for them. And of course they didn't know English. And I had to take their grocery list to the grocery store, and take them to the stores when they needed something, take them to the doctor when they were sick. And they didn't understand the American currency, or the dollar rather, and I had to explain to them, help them with their purchases.
You don't remember more or less how old you were?
I was in the neighborhood of 10, 12 years old.
Okay, so that was the basic reason why you got involved, because you could you were bilingual, you could understand both?
Yes, I was still in grade school.
So what did they do if the Bracero wanted to buy something? Couldn't they go themselves?
No.
To the store?
No, they didn't know their way around. They would give me, for example, the groceries. They would give me the grocery list, and I would take it to the store. The store would fill out
the order,
and deliver it.
Oh, they would deliver.
They would deliver it to the farm with the name of the person, and the contents, separate contents were different.
For each one?
Yes.
Oh. Remember what store it was?
It was a PNN store.
It was
called PNN. It was right there on Alameda where the post office was at one time, between Harris Street and I believe it's the corner of, in the street over from Harris.
Schutz?
No. Oh,
what's there now?
It's a dead end street now. Right there on the Chicago, El Service, El Garage de Olivas. The little street there. Stevens, I believe, is the name of it. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Because I remember the post office has been in two or three spots.
Mm-hmm. Well, the post office was there at one time.
And then that's where the PNN was. So he's been around a long time.
Oh, yeah.
PNN. The Big Eight. What's now the Big Eight?
No, not a Big Eight. It was PNN.
It was, yeah. But now it's the Big Eight.
Now right? A Big Eight store, yes. Okay.
So what kind of... Well, maybe we should start with where they lived on the... On the Spence farm.
The Braceros, uh-huh. Where they were housed. They were housed on the second floor of the farm equipment barn.
Which is a pretty big barn, wasn't it?
It was a pretty good size.
If I remember, it was large.
It was a pretty good sized barn. It was about 80 feet wide by about 120 feet long.
Yeah.
And they were bunked at the on what they would call the hay loft.
Which had already been there before.
It was already before, and it was converted to living quarters for the braceros.
Okay. And what did each one of them get when they came in as a bracero? What, like to sleep in or any?
They got an army cot or an army stretcher. They tell you that the Red Cross used the stretchers where they carried the wounded. They were about 5 inches off the ground, five or six inches.
So a real stretcher.
Huh? Yes, a real stretcher. And the other, the cot, was a regular sleeping cot. Hmm. Pretty much the same as what it is now. Only they were wood instead of aluminum.
Okay. And what, it had a mattress, and they get, what, a blanket?
They got, no, they didn't get a mattress. They got blankets. No mattresses. They slept on blankets. Army blankets, army surplus blankets.
Sounds like the cots and the stretchers were surplus too.
Yeah, see? The cots and the stretchers were surplus.
What about could they cook in their own,
They had their own little stoves.
I see, small little.
They had a stove for about every five or six guys.
And what did the stove work? I mean, was it like a little butane or what was it?
No, it was kerosene.
Oh, kerosene, okay.
Kerosene stove. That's what they used.
There was never any concern about a fire, that they might cause a fire up there, no?
I don't recall ever. No. They had fire extinguishers up there, but we never recall any fires of any kind.
Okay, so actually they could cook for themselves and if they wanted to.
Yeah. They cooked for themselves some, and some mom fed for a fee.
Well, was it all three meals or just a meal or two? Do you remember, did she fix breakfast, lunch, and dinner for them?
I think it was dinner, no mas. I think it was dinner, no mas.
So your mom would have to cook for, do you remember how many?
Oh, there was about, not all of them. We didn't cook for all of them. We cooked for maybe for about 10 or 12 of them.
Hmm. How much did she charge them, do you remember?
I think it was $250 a week or something like that.
I see, and that would just be taken off their paychecks?
They would pay her when they got their,
oh, I see,
their money on Fridays. They used to get paid Saturdays at noon.
So they work, what, 6.5 day weeks?
6.5 day weeks. Mm-hmm. Some of them worked longer, but it was voluntary, you know, they didn't have to.
Sunday, though, that was their day off?
Sunday was the day off, they didn't have to work on Sundays.
I see. So, the ones that cooked, then I guess that's where they would give you the list of what they wanted to...
What they wanted.
From the store?
From the store. But then, most of them had to take their own lunch. Like I said, okay. Mom only cooked dinner for them. They had to cook their own breakfast in there, and their lunch.
So they probably would have to get up early to prepare the food that they were going to take with them to the field, and then go off to...
In the wintertime, the frost was real bad. Some days it was more than others. And they didn't start early. They didn't start to pick early in the morning. They started to pick around 8:39 after the frost was gone.
I see.
They didn't want the owner, which would be Spence, did not want them picking wet cotton.
Oh, because that makes it heavier.
It makes it heavier, and if it's not taken care of and dried up, it mildew.
Oh, okay.
And it was not good for the cotton, for the grade.
So when did they usually start picking the cotton? What time of the, was it September, October?
It was around the 15th, 16th of September, usually. Mid-September.
Through how long?
Through January, about December, beginning of January.
That far, huh?
Yeah, but they would be gone by the end of December.
Oh.
And only a few people would stay to pick the rest. There was not much left.
Okay, and they get paid by the pound, right? Do you remember how much?
5 cents a pound.
5 cents a pound?
That's the last that I remember. They were getting 5 cents a pound. There were two grades. There was the what they call the short staple cotton, That was, I think, that one was 5 cents a pound. And then they had the Pima cotton, or the long staple, which was called long staple or Pima cotton. They used to get 10 to 12 cents on that.
What was the difference?
Difference being that the, what would be the cotton ball itself, the thing was, on the Pima, was a lot smaller.
Oh, so harder to pick?
It was, they had to pick a lot more of it to make weight.
I see. Oh, okay. Now, somebody told me that they would get, that, say, the first picking or the second picking, since there's more of it, it was easier. So maybe they'd get paid so much. And then as it got harder and more difficult, they'd get paid a little bit more. Do you remember anything like that? Was it always pretty much the same, whether it's the first picking or the last picking?
The first picking, I think, was a little more. The second picking was a little less. And I remember the second picking being 5 cents a pound.
Okay.
Because there was a lot more cotton.
Okay.
They used to pick three times. First, second, and the third time. The third time was as much as the first. But I don't remember the amount they used to get.
Okay. Now, we were talking yesterday about how they had different sizes of sacks.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The, what did you say, 8, 9?
8, 10, and 12.
That's foot lengths, right?
That's the length in feet. The 10 feet, 8, it was 8 footers, 10 footers, and 12 footers.
And that's basically how far they have to drag once they're filling the cotton, their sack, with the cotton, right, as they're picking.
Yes.
And so who would take like the 12-foot one?
The bigger guys.
Okay.
The bigger guys, because they could pack it and they could go almost to the end of the road before they had to go away. They didn't want to walk to the scales and weigh their cotton and unload their sack and then come back, take them too long. So then they figured the more they stay picking, the more weight they make.
How much, do you remember more or less, how much they could put in a 12-foot or one of the other?
They could put it on a 12-footer, they could put 150 pounds.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
At 5 cents, that's 750?
And it would take them somewhere between 2, 2.5 hours.
For a 7, so that's...
To fill up a 12-foot sack for 150 pounds. Oh. Some guys could pick 500 to 520.
In one day?
In one day.
See?
Yeah. They were good pickers. Some of them. Some of them were not so good pickers. They could marry them and then they make.
But did you ever work at... there was a person who would weigh it, right? They'd go to the... Did you ever do something like that? Weigh the...
No, I never. You know? No, I never. They had a person. They'd come from town and do the weighing.
Okay. And then
That's all he did was just weigh.
Okay. Do you remember what did he do? How did he keep track of? Because I interviewed somebody that said that each bracero had like a little feature with a number on it. And that's how they would record how much that person had picked, and that's how they would get paid. Do you remember how?
In some farms they had a tag number, and every time you were away, it showed a tag, and they would credit you with that number
with the
weight.
So you didn't necessarily know them by name, huh? I mean, and they wouldn't pay them necessarily. They wouldn't record the weight by name.
By name, no. In some areas, although at the farm where I lived, we never had a tag system because there weren't that many.
Okay.
We all knew them by name, personally. We knew who they were. Although they did have a payroll number, and they got paid by that payroll number, but it was mostly by name. They had a ledger done on names, and everybody had a page. At the end of the day, the tally.
Who did that? Do you know?
The waymaster.
The one that came in from town.
The one that came in from town.
You remember that person?
I remember his name. It was Luciano Reyes. He used to live right up the road here.
Oh no! What would this be? What street?
On Candelaria Street, Candelaria and Leonardo.
Okay. So he was like the, what did you call him? The paymaster.
The waymaster.
Waymaster. There was never any question about somebody being not, you know, that they picked more and that they were cheated on their how much weight they had picked or anything. No.
I don't recall them ever having any disputes over that. Everybody got paid his due. That old man kept pretty good records. And he kept a record of what was on the trailer and how many pounds he had to have on that trailer to determine how many bales. Oh. You had to have so much weight on that trailer for so many bales. Right. You couldn't have a half a bale, or he wanted full bales.
So
the weighmaster had to take care of that. Although I don't recall how many pounds to the bale. No me acuerdo.
So they worked until Saturday noon. What about like on Sunday? Would they all stay there on the farm, or would they?
No, some of them would go to town, the movies. Usually the movies. Or they'd send off to get the beer, whatever. But they usually know. They used to hang around and do their laundry.
Oh, okay. And where would they do the laundry then?
Hmm?
Where would they do the laundry? Did they have tubs or anything?
No, they did it on the cattle trough.
Oh, okay.
They had a big cement trough, and they used to do their laundry there by hand. And then hang it on the wire and the fences or whatever.
The barbed wire.
The barbed wire fence, or wherever they could find a sunny spot to hang their clothes. But that was usually the Sunday task.
Huh. Did you ever talk to them? Where do you remember, like, what states in Mexico they were from?
No, they were from all over Mexico. The ones that I talked to the most were from Chihuahua and Juarez. The cotton pickers here were mostly from Chihuahua, Juarez, and around the Torreón area.
Okay.
Because around the Torreón, Mexico area, they grew a lot of cotton there, and they were very familiar with cotton picking. Those were the good pickers.
Oh.
Yeah. The ones that didn't pick so good were city folks. They had worked in restaurants and that sort of thing.
And then they came to do farm labor here.
They came to do farm labor. And it was really hard on them.
Oh.
Especially the ones that come from the subtropics like Mazatlan and on there, where they don't get much winter there and don't get too cold. They struggle with the weather here. Got a little too cold for them. And if you remember back in them days, we used to get some snow and stuff, remember?
Yeah. So that's one of the things I usually ask at the end, how the weather's changed. But what about their clothing? Do you remember? Could you?
Their clothing were the typical Mexican clothing of the time. It was kind of like baggy pants. Kind of like the Arabs use now.
Okay, sort of like the peones, white?
White. It was usually white, and it was a real fine canvas-like material.
Oh, okay.
Like a flour sack material.
But could you tell where some of them were from by how they were dressed, maybe? Or
yes.
Shoes? Or
you can tell the ones from the interior of Mexico, they wore huaraches. And they wore those baggy pants, and they wore those big loose shirts. And the ones from close to the border here, they wore more like jeans and khaki pants and shoes and boots.
What about once they started to make money? Say the ones with huaraches, did they change? Did they buy shoes and more comfortable clothes or no?
Not so much clothes. They bought big thick socks because they couldn't wear shoes.
Because they were used to huaraches?
They used to huaraches, yeah. and it was too hard for them. It was too hard on their shoes and boots were too hard on their feet. They would blister pretty bad, Richard.
See?
Their feet were torn. They were all sprawled out, you know, they're not used to being contained in a shoe. And you know, their toes done a scene.
It's real spread out.
Yeah, they were real spread out, and they had trouble wearing shoes.
Even in the winter? Well, I guess that's why they would buy the thick socks.
They would
socks.
Buy those big thick socks.
Did they ever buy anything to take back with them, say, to
yes.
their families?
Yes, they did. They used to buy stuff to take back with them. They couldn't take very much. But they did buy stuff for their wives, usually clothes for their wife and their kids. They bought clothes, mostly clothes. And maybe a little Friol or two, perfume or two for their wives.
Okay. Did they ever tell you, I would guess, why they were here?
Well, they were here for economic reasons. Most of them, if not all of them, were here for economic reasons. They were here to make a little bit of money to go back to their country. Some of them didn't want to go back. Some of them would rather stay, but they weren't allowed to stay. And then some of them would go, and they would come back illegal. The ones that lived close to the border, they used to come back illegal. If somebody would provide for work for them, they would cross the border and come to work. I know of two of them.
Wouldn't that be harder for them? I mean, wouldn't the idea of having a contract and being a sort of a legal bracero, that would be much better than being illegal? Because you could be picked up and sent back.
The Border Patrol was very conscious of that. I remember when they were being picked up and sent back, they would go to the boss's house and collect their paycheck.
Oh,
collect their money before they deported them. Some of them, not all of them. Some of them.
Hmm.
Some of them would write and give an address. We could mail their money.
Oh. You couldn't? Or you could?
Yeah, we couldn't. Could. We could mail their money. Some of them would leave a name and an address. And we would collect the money and mail it to them.
That would be who? Spence would do that?
And Spence would give us the money and we would send it to him.
I see. In a money order or something?
In a money order or usually it was a money order.
Hmm.
But not very, very rarely. Very rarely did we do that. I remember maybe one, twice. Maybe once or twice. Hmm. Two different occasions. But not. They were good at paying them before they took them back.
Now, lately there's been this talk about how supposedly some part of their paycheck was kept, and then it was supposed to be put in a fund, and there's braceros now in Mexico who are, I guess they're trying to bring a lawsuit or have brought a lawsuit to get that money back. But I've talked to people who say that as far as they know, everything that they were due was paid them, that there was never any, like an annuity money taken out. Do you know anything about that?
I don't know exactly how that worked, but I know by my experiences counting their money, they got paid their due. Whatever money was owed them for their week's work or their wages, they were paid in full.
To the penny, right?
To the penny. There was no money retained for no annuity or any other purpose.
Except what they had spent, say, on
except
groceries.
Except for groceries, a grocery bill, or medicine, or whatever. And I don't think even the medicine, I think the medicine was theirs. If they had to go to the doctor, I think it was not money out of their pocket.
Oh, I see. The farm owner would
The farm owner would take care of the doctor bill.
Doctor bill.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that's the way it was. But as far as wages, I don't recall ever seeing any money deducted from their wages. Mm. Not even Social Security, not even income tax.
Nothing.
They got paid whatever was owed them.
Do you remember if they got sick, what doctor would they go to? Was it a doctor here in town? Or
it would be.
Would he go to the farm? Or
sometimes the doctor would go to the farm if there was one or two, three guys sick. The doctor would make a call. And more often than not, just take them to the doctor Delgado, aquí in the hospital, Isleta Hospital.
Okay.
That's usually where they ended up. But they didn't get sick very often, other than the cold or runny nose and stuff.
But nothing in anything.
Nothing serious. I don't recall anyone ever getting seriously sick, ill. That was here in El Paso.
Did you ever have to go to the Rio Vista? Ever have any dealings with the...
I never went to Rio Vista.
So how did the Braceros get to the Spence farm? Do you remember?
I remember the ones that I dealt with, the times that I dealt with the Braceros. I was a young, very young man at the time. And we had to go to the CC camp. It's called a CC camp on Zaragoza. Zaragoza Road.
That would the be, would where be, is that today? Near the freeway? Near
it's right in front of Sherwood Park.
Okay.
Across Zaragoza from Sherwood Park. And the Braceros would be there. That they were already under contract. They would bring them from the Rio Vista farm and bus them here. And there they would be picked up. And they would only be there for 2-3 days. And if they weren't picked up, then they would be returned to the pool.
Back to Rio Vista.
Back to Rio Vista to be picked up by someone else.
That's different, because all I've ever heard was they were always at Rio Vista, and then from there they would be taken to... I've never heard that they were sometimes be brought over to the CCC camp.
The CCC camp. They were what was later the Rough Riders.
Right.
At that CCC camp was where the prisoners of war were, the Germans.
During World War II.
Before the Bracero program. They were housed there.
Okay, but if they were there at that old CCC camp, it wasn't for very long, just a little bit. Why would they bring them here? Is it for the farmers that lived a little bit closer into town?
It was a different... They were contracted in a different manner than they were already... They knew where they were going. These people knew where they were going. They weren't in the pool, and the farmer would come, I need 10, and he'd take 10 out of the pool. No, these people were already contracted.
Maybe they had been here before?
They had been here before.
Oh, okay.
They had been here before. And I don't know exactly how it worked, but the farmer would request so-and-so by name, and they would be motor pooled over here, and they would be picked up over here because they were under different status, I think, than the rest of the Braceros.
The ones at the Rio Vista?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's unusual.
It only happened twice that I remember. But then we left the farm, so I don't know what happened.
Okay. And they were usually then, when they would be brought in, was it by truck, by bus, by...
From the CCC camp to the... We picked them up in a truck.
Okay.
In a two-ton truck that would be brought in. There weren't that many. Maybe it was about 12, 20 at the most. No eran mucho, Rich. There weren't that many.
Because how big was the Spence farm?
It was 185 acres.
Oh, okay.
I believe it was somewhere there. 185 acres. And it was all in cotton sometimes. It had three pickings. So, it took a while to pick all that cotton.
Sure. Now you said you left the farm. What, do you remember what year it was?
I left the farm, the Spence farm.
Mm-hmm.
I left that in 1900 and... I'll tell you, wait a minute, 55, I believe it was.
So when you were about, 16, 17?
Mm-hmm.
Why did you all leave the farm?
We moved to Oregon. We went. We were what you call
Sort of migrant.
Migrant workers.
Yeah. Except that you just went there and back, right?
Instead, yes.
Migrant workers usually go.
No.
Most of the year to one from one place to another.
No, we went to that particular place and back and, home.
Okay, and you would go up there, what time of the year?
Around early March, first, second week in March.
And you would come back?
Come back in September.
Oh, I see.
Later part of September.
Why was it, why did you go up there? I mean, you were doing farm work too, right?
Yeah, we were doing farm work. But we were working in the fields. We were working in the beet fields and carrot fields and bean fields and stuff like that.
But it's kind of far to go. Why was it? What was the difference?
The pay?
Oh. How much would you get paid here?
I think it was 50 cents an hour.
And up there?
It was $1.50 and $2 an hour.
Oh, really? That much more? 3-4 times more?
Uh-huh. Okay. And then we did contract work.
Which was, how much different is that?
Well, contract work, we did it by the acre. And when the thinning and the hoeing came together, and we would do it, maybe I think it was $40 or $50 an acre.
For beet, this would be the beets, right?
It would be the beets.
And there was several of you also would, you could get together and it would be, right, and it would be the family.
It would be the family, all together.
Yeah.
We'd pull together. And then the rest we did by the hour. The weeding and the beans and the carrots and that sort of thing.
I see.
But the beets were the only ones that we contracted.
Now, one year you went up to, oh, this was, what part of Oregon was this, Oregon, Washington?
This was Milton Freewater, Oregon.
Okay. But I know that one, was it 1 year or two, you went up to an apple in Chelan, Washington?
Lake Chelan.
What, how come you ended up there? What was?
We went to, we ended up over there picking apples. Mm-hmm. We went out there to pick apples.
Did you hear from somebody about this or what?
Yeah, my brother-in-law, Juan Peña, he used to go over there to pick apples. And he carted us up there 1 year. I think it was only 2 years that we picked apples. In the first year I was there, I dealt with the braceros up there also.
So there were braceros there too?
Yes, I did. I dealt with the braceros up there also.
How did they, was there, were the particular apple growers there, then they needed workers and they would just bring them from, how had they gotten in? I mean, did they come in through California, through?
That, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know where they came from or how they got contracted, how they ended up over there. I know is that a bunch of apple growers got together and they would contract some pickers, and they would pick. They would go from orchard to orchard.
Oh, I see.
With different apple growers.
Right.
They kind of like got together because one of them, he couldn't do with one or two pickers. It took him forever to pick them. So they got together and they would bring in a few, I'd say 20, 25 of them, and they'd go from orchard to orchard, or they split them up and they could get their apples harvested quicker.
Quicker, okay. And where did they live when they were there?
They lived in a kind of like a labor camp area.
Did you ever go there?
Yes.
How was it?
It was little two-room sheds. They would house the guys, and they had a communal bathroom or showers and what have you, and a laundromat.
Oh,
they would do their laundry and stuff there.
So how many per room, how many braceros would live in one?
About three guys in each little shed.
And would they be given like the same things, a little cot, a little...
They would be given a cot and a place to sleep and in a little kitchen where they could cook. And I, like I said, the bathroom was not there. It was in the center of that compound, sort of. And
was the, did you think it was, I mean, was it clean? Was it, or was it taken care of? Or, cause sometimes people say that some of these labor camps were dirty, that they, the owners didn't really, you know, have good sanitation or health or other things. Did you see any of that? Was it pretty well, was it clean?
The one that I saw in Chelan was pretty clean. It was well kept. And they had a person that would do the cleaning.
Oh, okay. Paid by the braceros or paid by?
Paid, no, they were paid by the farmers.
The farmers.
The fruit farmers.
Okay. You remember more or less how many braceros were in that camp?
There were quite a few. I would venture to say in the neighborhood of 50, 75.
Okay. And we're talking about, I mean, there must, I never went, but there must have been many acres of apples.
Oh, there were acres and acres and acres of apples, but the braceros were not the only one picking.
Right. Some, you all were picking too.
We were picking also. And there were people, there was people from all over picking apples.
Other migrant workers from the U.S.
There were migrant workers like us.
So I wonder why would they bring braceros in? Because they just needed more?
They needed more help. That's why they weren't that many. They just brought a few in to kind of...
And were the braceros paid the same as, say, what you all were paid?
Or? Everybody got paid the same. The same amount.
Which was per box, right?
Per box.
Which was, do you remember how much?
I don't remember exactly the amount. I don't recall the exact amount, how much we got. We got paid different. That's how come I don't remember. One type of apple was one price, and another type of apple was another price, and another type of apple was another price. The apple that paid the most was the golden delicious apple. But you had to be very careful with it, because it bruised easy. And you have to be more gentle with them. And therefore, they expected you to go slower and take care of them.
So they not paid you more
so they paid you more money so you'd be more careful.
Okay. And these were large trees, aren't they?
It's huge trees. You could pick 50, 60 boxes off a tree. Crates. Apple crates.
So how did you get involved with the braceros who were there?
Because I was bilingual.
Oh, okay.
And it's for the same reason that I got involved here.
So what, you were picking one day and the farmer couldn't communicate?
He couldn't communicate, and I, you know, I was talking to the braceros, you know, and they knew that I understood English. And sometimes they would come to me when they needed to explain something to the boss, or the boss, and then pretty soon the boss found out that I could communicate with them, and he would come to me and ask me to tell him things.
And like some, what? Like where to go, or?
Like to be careful with the trees, not to lean the letters on the limbs, to be careful with the ladders, you know, when you climb, not to climb to the very top of the ladder, not to climb the tree itself to pick the apple, and how to pick the apple to keep from pulling the stem. An apple that has no stem is no good. Water gets in the hole where the stem was and it rots.
Okay.
So it had to have a stem on it. And not to pull the little twigs off the tree because that was going to be next year's crop. They didn't want all that stuff off of the tree. They had to be careful. And then I had to explain that to them. And pretty much the same as, you know, communicating with them, telling them if you need to go to the store, if you need stuff that you need, write a list of stuff that you need so I can take it to the boss man or whoever he was that was in charge of them, and he would see to it that they got it. If not, at times they had a bus, and we would bus them to town to buy their stuff, their needs, their toiletries, or their, you know, soap, food.
And you would go with them?
I would go with them, because like I said before, they didn't understand the money. We didn't know American dollar.
No, this was, well, did they ever pay you for this, or was this all just...
No, I got paid. I got paid. I got paid for
now. Being like an interpreter or...
An interpreter and helping them with their needs, and the ranchers would give me a little something for my troubles. I made a little bit of money. But I never charged the braceros. I charged the rancher. The farmer, the apple farmer. But no, I never charged the braceros any money with it. I did it to help them.
Did they ever tell you about like any problems they were having with the farmers and you know, complaints?
I got a complaint one, but it wasn't with the farmer. It was one of the other pickers. That he went in and dumped up a couple of apple boxes. But I don't recall if it was the field man, the field inspector, or just another picker. And he, the gentleman came to me, and I had to go tell the boss what was happening. But other than that, I don't remember.
So they usually got along pretty well?
Well, they got along well. Those people came here to work, and that was it. They didn't complain. They didn't complain much. They weren't whiners or anything like that. They came here to work and make money and go back to their homes. They were hard workers, most of them.
Now, the apple picking season is also in the fall, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Late fall.
So it would get cold up there where these men...
Oh, man, it was cold. It was cold. 1 year snowed on us before we finished picking.
And were these are Mexican braceros who maybe aren't used to the cold. Were they ready for?
No, they weren't dressed for it. We had to, I had to take them to town for them to get coats. And what they did mostly was go to the surplus store and get those army blankets and cut holes in where they could stick their head through it like a poncho.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's all?
That's they like that more than jackets. They would rather have a poncho-like thing.
Yeah. Was that enough, though, for them to keep warm?
Well, some of them bought long johns. Mm. But they didn't like to wear jackets and stuff. They would rather wear the poncho and big, heavy socks and stuff.
Maybe because the poncho was looser? Is that?
They claimed that the poncho was warmer than the jacket. Because they could sit in kind of like a little tent and they stay warm, where the wind wouldn't get to them.
Now, there was something I meant to ask you. Back here on the Spence farm, you were mentioning to me about how it used to get cold up on the hayloft on the Spence farm.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were problems with the braceros who would get cold. Why was that, do you remember?
Well, the boards on the floor, which was the floor of the loft, were not tight up against each other. They had maybe about a half inch or three quarter inch gap between boards. And naturally, you get a natural draft up through the boards. And at night, it got cold. It got miserable cold. Until some of them got the idea of putting cardboards down and whatever they could find. Or pack the cracks.
I see.
And then Spence got him a big coal oil heater.
Okay.
And that's how they kept warm. And they took turns dumping the oil in the heater
to stay warm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they would stay warm that way. But at first it was real cold for them. And I told Spence that they were cold, that they were complaining that it was too cold. And he went and got him the heater. Oh. Big, huge heater. It had a little blower on it.
Okay.
It wasn't warm, you know, like, it wasn't warm like you could wear a t-shirt, but it was comfortable warm.
Better than nothing at all.
A lot better.
Well, back to the apples in Washington. So these men could... Presumably, they could make a lot of money, right? Assuming But they didn't have very many expenses other than just whatever they spent. Is that right? So, well, what I'm thinking is they could have made a lot of money if they saved most of it.
They did. Some of them made a bunch of money. Some of them would go to town and splurge. Some of them would drink. Some of them would smoke. Others, they stayed around the camp and made money. I mean, they didn't go out to town and spend their money.
How would they send it back? Would they send it back, or would they keep it in cash? Or?
Some of them would keep it. Some of them would even ask the boss to hold it for them until they left.
And they trusted him?
They trusted him enough. They trusted him enough where he could hold the money for them. Not all of it. You know, he'd give them some and put some away. And I guess they got their money at the end of the season, and they take off. Some of them would write the money orders at the post office. And I would take them to the post office, and they write money orders and send their money home. Some of them didn't. And some of them spend most of it.
Oh, really?
Well, yeah. Some of them didn't have much when they left.
I'm curious about, you were mentioning how you, some apples you have to be careful not to bruise, and you have to pick them a certain way. The apple growers, they brought in people basically who, I would assume they had never picked an apple before. Mm-hmm. And they had to be taught, and so the apple growers, that didn't concern them, that these people had to be...
Oh yeah, it concerned them a lot. And they were always after them, you know. They were always, and that's where I came in. I had to remind them and remind them and remind them that these apples couldn't be bruised. Otherwise, they were of no value to the grower. And they had to be careful. But they were, all of them were pretty conscious.
They never, like, fired anybody who said, you know, that's it?
No.
We've warned you enough times? No?
No, not that I recall. It wasn't that kind of a discipline. They didn't need that kind of discipline.
Oh, okay.
They were very conscientious workers.
It just seems like a long way to go. And it would be harder. You'd have to, like, put up with more. Because it'd be harder if you wanted to fire somebody and send them home.
Some were sent home, as far as I know. Some, but not in the group that I dealt with. But there were some apple growers that complained about having to send some of them back.
And how would they be sent back?
They would be taken to the compound where they were contracted out, and from there they would be shipped out.
Okay.
How, I don't know.
No, okay. They never told you how they got there in the first place?
I never knew how they got there. I never knew how they left.
Okay. So when you all left, and after that harvest, you came back the next year, and I think you said they weren't there anymore? Is that right?
Or
is
that's right, that's correct, but I don't recall the year. One year they were there, and the next year they weren't. No more Raseros.
And then you never found out why?
No. I never knew why. I think the Rasero program was over.
Okay.
That was when no more Raseros, I believe. It was at that time, but what year it was, I don't recall.
Okay. So overall, what do you think of what you remember about the braceros and their experiences? You think it was good for them? It was not so good?
I think, all in all, it was good for everybody concerned. It was good for the bracero because he made some money. And he was good for the rancher or the farmer because he got his crops in to market. Although some of them were very inexperienced. They were totally out of their environment.
Some of the braceros.
Some of the braceros.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Because I've been told that, you know how they had to go, they would be processed through Chihuahua,
mm-hmm.
and then they would come here to the border,
mm-hmm.
and that when they were processed, people would check their hands to make sure that, you know, if they have calluses and, you know, are you really a worker?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a little surprised that some of them got through and still had some problems in doing farm work.
They usually tried to contract farm workers,
yeah.
but you know, people wanted to come to work, you know, they would maybe lie about it.
Yeah.
But they're very few and far between, but some of them you could tell they were way out of their environment, way out. Hmm.
Do you remember how old, what the ages were of most of these men?
Most of these men were in their mid-20s. They were in their mid-20s to mid-30s. They were all pretty much the same age.
And did they look their age?
They looked older.
Older, okay.
Older.
Yeah.
Some of them looked a lot older than what they were. They were kind of like, I would say, weather-beaten. The years has not been, the years, life has not been kind to them, you could tell.
Did you ever have any came who would come back to where you got to know them well? They would be back maybe 2 or 3 years. And
I got to know a few that would come back. Not in Oregon, here.
Here at Spence?
And here in Spence's farm. There was one of them came back 2 or 3 years. Some of them. They were here a couple of years.
Do you remember any names?
Miguel was one of them, but I can't recall his last name. Call him Miguelon. He came back for about 3 years, but he never left Juarez.
Oh, he was from Juarez?
No, he was from interior Mexico.
Oh, I see.
But he brought his family to Juarez. So next year he could contract out and he could go to Juarez on weekends.
And be with the family.
And be with the family on the weekends. Because they could go and come. They could come and go anytime they want to.
I see.
As long as they showed their, I guess, status, Brazil status, card or whatever.
Okay.
But they could go and come maybe, I think it's only on weekends. But during the week they should be working.
Right. You would assume they'd be too tired to. And they would work.
But some of them, like I said, they brought their families close to the border and they stayed here. And every year they would come. They would come back, contract. Those are the ones that you would pick up at the CCC camp.
Right.
The ones that were already contracted and had been here before. We had about 3 or 4 of them. I don't remember their name. One of them was Miguel, and the other one was Don Ramon Maldonado. He lived in Zaragoza. He lived here in Zaragoza. And the other one was, I don't recall his name. He's in a Molacho.
Any of them that eventually stayed and settled here in Isleta, here in El Paso?
One of them, Leonardo. He went back, he came back, and he lives out in Socorro now.
And what's his last name?
Maldonado.
Oh, so Maldonado.
And then there was another guy, what the heck was his name? Claudio. But he died in an accident or something, but he was here, he came back.
Well, one other thing that I'm asking people is, and you mentioned it before about the weather, but before I ask about the weather, since you grew up in this area, how has it changed? Of course, the population is a lot more, but how else has this area changed?
The weather?
And the weather and just the people. Well, ask you this. You right there against the Spence farm is sort of right up against the hills. What kind of wild animals did you have back in those days that you probably wouldn't see today?
Oh, we had pheasant. We had raccoons. We had coyotes. I imagine there's still coyotes there, but they're few and far between. We had bobcats.
And
you would see a fox every now and then, and you would see a badger every now and then.
A badger, really?
A badger.
See?
You see badgers every now and then. Jackrabbits and cottontail.
And roadrunners and stuff.
Roadrunners and lizards and those chameleons, horny toads.
Oh, really? Those two?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you could find them there in the ranch, the horny toads. You probably couldn't find them now.
No, I don't think so.
You could see ducks, a lot of ducks, geese. The geese would land there. They would light right there in the drainage ditch.
Right.
wild geese, Canadian geese, honkers, or what do you call them? A lot of ducks. We could fish right there at the drainage ditch.
Really? And you could eat the fish?
Oh, yeah, you could
eat the fish. What kind of fish was it?
They were black bass, they were sun perch, they were carp, and catfish.
That's the drainage ditch that's right alongside North Loop now? The one close by North Loop or no?
Yeah, the one between North Loop and the hills.
Huh.
The one right alongside the Del Valle High School now. Right there on the view, the Ivy Farm. Right. That one. Right. That one.
That was what, just runoff water from the irrigation, so maybe that's where they came from?
Not all runoff water. Some of it was table water.
Okay.
Some of it would come out of the ground because the ditch was so deep.
Oh, okay.
It would rise out of the ground and start running.
Hmm. Did it used to rain more? Does it seem to you like it rained more? Did it used to be colder than it is now?
It was definitely colder than what it is now. It used to rain more, and it used to snow. We used to get 2-3 snows a year.
Yeah.
And it snowed quite a bit, 5-6 inches every time. I know, because when it snowed a lot, we didn't go to school. We stayed home that day. I remember. I still have pictures. Aquí, mi vieja tiene pictures aquí de when it snowed.
Right in front.
Mm-hmm. 56, 55, 54. Mm-hmm.
Well.
And the people are different now. You could trust people back then. You can't trust anybody now. You could leave your car open, leave the keys in it, nobody bothered. And I wouldn't know. You know, we didn't have all this graffiti and stuff like that.
Right. It has changed a lot.
Yeah, it's changed a lot. It's changed a lot.
There's one other thing. It's tied to the braceros. You mentioned that some of the braceros would talk about how there was maybe a ghost or something in the... There was it in the hayloft where they... would sleep, that something would pull their blankets off?
No, it was in the tech room, downstairs. They said that they could feel somebody sitting on the edge of their cot.
And there was nobody there?
There was nobody there. And they could hear people talking. But there was no one there. They couldn't make out what they were saying, because it was more like a murmur.
Mm-hmm.
And they could hear a horse running down the road. At night, there ain't no horses. One night, even any horse tracks.
Now, what did they used to call that ranch?
Rancho El Diablo.
Because?
Because they say that people back then said that they saw the devil there one time. I don't know.
I've heard that somebody saw somebody hanging from a tree there in the yard. Is that true?
In the front yard, in the courtyard. They saw someone hanging from a tree, but... I don't know.
So was this an old farm?
It was an old farm. It was an old place. But they had new buildings. The buildings weren't that old. Some of them weren't that old. But it was an old place.
So there was, as far as the buildings, there was the home where you and your dad and your mom and your brothers and sisters. Then there was the courtyard, and then there was the big barn, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where the hayloft was, where the braceros
slept.
The braceros
were on the top.
And then
there was a lean-to shed, kind of. It had three walls only. It was open in the front. And it had the corrals there where the cows were. And then further down, about 3 or 4 bays, about 20-foot bays, we used to put equipment, farm equipment in there. And then at the end was the scales that ran on the roadway there, alongside the roadway, there was the scales. And at the very end, on the south end, would be the southeast end, mm-hmm. was another house, pretty good, with 4 rooms. It was a duplex, what you would call now a duplex. There were 2 houses in one, but it was one house with 2 rooms in each house.
Okay.
And at the other end on the north.
Who lived in that house there on the
one of the workers.
Oh, was he like a caretaker or something? Why was it way over there on the end?
No, he was just another farmhand.
Oh, okay.
He was just another regular farmhand that lived there.
And then on the opposite end, this would be like behind your all's house.
It would be behind our house, more towards, it would be on the northwest area. It would be another long building, I would venture to say, about 30 foot wide and about 100 feet long. And it was had, on the very north end, it had a garage type opening. Sliding doors would open like a garage. And then there was a little room in there. That building itself was about, 60 feet long, maybe a little more. And there was a little room there, little tech room, had a side door. And then towards the end of the building, there were three rooms, big rooms, where people lived there.
Workers
also. Workers, farm workers. Okay. And then there was a space between it and our house, and right there on the corner of the house, was the water well shed.
Oh, so the ranch had a...
No, the ranch had its own water.
Its own water?
Uh-huh.
Did you ever run out?
Oh, no. No, we never ran out of water. It had an electric motor, an electric pump. It had a big, huge reservoir. Oh. It had about 100 and... maybe 150, 200 gallon reservoir. It dumped. It had quite a bit of pressure. It was good water, too.
I don't remember that.
No?
No.
Yeah.
Well, anything else you want to can remember that maybe I've forgotten to ask? About? Any other experience that...
No, I just thought that Braceros... I found it odd that, you know, that these people would come... without any, you know, warm clothes or shoes. I found out that some of them weren't wearing shoes. You know, just the huaraches. And then some of them wouldn't shower, some of them wouldn't clean up. Some of them wouldn't even shave.
Really? Why did you think, was they, because they were just lazy or just,
no.
That was just their way?
I think that was just their way. They came from way tier up in the mountains somewhere. I don't know where they came from. They just didn't believe in cleaning up.
There's one other question, though, that reminds me of something else. How would they change? Like, if you saw one, you know, say, just over, and then after a few months or maybe the second year, were they dressed differently? Did they act differently? Were they a little more... confident, or you know what I'm saying?
And I understand. The first year that they came, they were kind of like a little bit raw. They weren't, they didn't know exactly what they were up against. But then the second time I'd see them, they'd be a little more prepared. They knew what they were up against. And they kind of prepared a little better for what they were going to encounter here. And some of them started to understand the dollar.
Okay.
And their currency a little better. And then they, some of them start picking up some of the customs of the locals. So yeah. they kind of adjusted, some of them.
Because some people have suggested that they're very, like, very submissive, muy humildes. And then you could see where they got a little bit, maybe a little bit more assertive and more confident. And did you see some of that? Maybe you could see it in how they dressed and how they...
You could tell that they were getting a little more confident. And they, at first they were kind of like... scared. Very, 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 they were kind of like humiliated. They were scared to say anything. But then, say, one second, third year, you could tell that they were more assertive. They could talk to you. At first, they wouldn't even talk to you. They didn't trust you at all.
Would they even look you in the eye?
They wouldn't even look in the eye. Sí, patroncito, you know, they were kind of, you know, but then towards the end, they got a little more assertive. They got a little confident, and then they got to where they trusted you. At first, they didn't trust you at all. Mm. You had to earn their trust. There were very few of them that would trust you. But then, you know, you started talking to them and joking with them and saying how you doing and all that stuff. And then you would help them with their mailing, their letters, what, send home their letters. Some of them could read or write. Some of them, you know, we had to write letters for them and read the mail.
What would they say in their letters home?
They send money. When they send the money, they'd say, you know, what it was for and how to spend it and put it away or save it for me. And I'll be there a certain date, you know, more or less. I'll be there in 2-3 weeks. I'll be there in a month or so. That sort of thing.
I see.
So, you know, just, it's kind of like very private, but you had to know what they wanted to say, so you had to overwrite it.
Sure.
And then when they got some of them would say, don't answer me, don't answer my letter. Some of them, they would receive mail. Some of them would receive mail. The ones that were closer.
Oh, okay.
They would receive letters and stuff, and, you know, give them the letter, and some of them would ask another bracero, because not all of them didn't know how to read. Right? Some of them, some of them were pretty sharp with numbers. Most of them were pretty sharp with numbers. You couldn't fool them with numbers. Pero, you know, they would ask one of their peers to read the letter for them and stuff.
Oh, okay.
But all in all, I think it was a good program. If they had kept it, I think, well, I don't know. Some of this farm equipment wouldn't be what it is now if they had kept, you know, hand-picking everything. We wouldn't have the modern equipment that we have now.
Yeah, which is, are you saying that's worse or it's better? Would you rather have the hand?
The hand-picked stuff was a lot better grade than the machine-picked. The machine tears up stuff.
Yeah.
And it wastes a lot. Mm-hmm. But I guess it one thing, you know, covers the other, because they could get it picked and to market a lot quicker.
Yeah.
And they didn't have the hassle dealing with all these people. The machine doesn't complain.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Well, I think that's it.
That's
so this is the end of the interview.